Welcome back. This is KSQD 90.7 and KSQD.org. And this is Talk of the Bay. We have guests with us today in KSQD's Harvey West Park Studios. And we are talking about the state of homelessness in the city of Santa Cruz. In April of this year, the Santa Cruz City Council voted 5-2 to accept the city staff's recommended amendments to the oversized vehicle ordinance law. This vote reversed some significant and people-friendly changes which the Planning Commission had made to the law. Councilmembers Justin Cummings and Sandy Brown voted no. The usual developer and real estate-friendly clean-up and clean-out Santa Cruz of its most vulnerable voted in favor of the oversized vehicle ordinance. Mayor Sonia Bruner, Vice Mayor Martine Watkins, and Councilmembers Donna Myers, Shebra Kalantari-Johnson, and Renee Golder all voted yes. Oversized vehicle ordinance. Appeals of last November's original decision were filed in January by the American Civil Liberties Union and Reggie Meisler of the group Santa Cruz Cares. Stay with me here. Both appeals essentially argued that the rules unfairly criminalized unhoused people living in vehicles and didn't provide enough alternatives for safe parking. The council's vote approved what are called coastal and design permits for the new rules, making the restrictions on RV parking enforceable. Now I believe the same groups have filed appeals to the California Coastal Commission, which is scheduled to hear the case July 13th to 15th at their meeting. And I say 13th to 15th because sometimes it's hard to figure out when something will come up on that Coastal Commission agenda, but just go to the Coastal Commission website. With me in the studio is Keith McHenry. He's a writer, he's a co-founder of the global movement Food Not Bombs, and he's also on the executive board of the National Union of the Homeless. Welcome, Keith McHenry.
Thanks, Chris, for having us. This is great.
Alicia Kuhl is the president of the Homeless Union. She recently transitioned from her RV into an apartment with her three children. Alicia Kuhl ran for the city council in 2018 and continues her involvement in local politics by advocating just and equitable treatment for the houseless people. Welcome to Talk of the Bay, Alicia.
Thank you. The only correction is 2020. I ran in 2020.
She ran in 2020. Thank you very much.
Cool.
But thank you for having me.
Keith and Alicia, can you bring us up to speed on the oversized vehicle ordinance law from your perspective and what hopes you might have of it being stopped by at the Coastal Commission? Alicia Kuhl of the Homeless Union, you go first.
So I agree with much of what you said and what the ACLU says. It's very discriminatory towards people that don't have houses. I feel that it very much targets people who are homeless, living in their vehicles, people who have literally nowhere else to go. The city has put no parking almost entirely throughout the city or has limited parking for vehicles already. And so, unfortunately, residential zones are the only places that have unregulated parking. We have a very, very limited to sometimes no safe parking programs. The ones that are proposed are limited. It's not going to handle the scope of the need, and they come with barriers.
Keith McHenry, same question. Your perspective on the oversized vehicle ordinance that was passed by the city council earlier this year.
I think it's a major crisis because as the economy is collapsing, the first thing just was as what happened with Alicia, that you do is you go out and buy an oversized vehicle to move into. And then if you go into an oversized vehicle and they tow your vehicle because of this law, then you come to Food Not Bombs and I hand you a $38 pup tent and send you to the benchlands. And that's where this is at.
Wow. Alicia, tell us your story. You had a recent story about the vehicle that you owned after you moved into a home, and it was towed away. Tell us that story, would you?
Yeah, so I recently transitioned out of an RV that I lived in, unfortunately, on the streets of Santa Cruz for the past 4 years. I received a housing voucher and moved into an apartment in April and was letting someone else stay in my RV. It's a standard problem here in Santa Cruz. even parking enforcement and police officers, they're not even chalking tires anymore. They don't even prove whether or not you've been there for 72 hours. They want to get rid of you, so they either write tickets or they tow. And on the 16th, my RV was towed away from the spot that it was parked in, and it had only been in that spot for 48 hours. It cost $771 to get it out, and it was a horrible experience. We arrived at the police impound yard, Auto Care Towing, and they had my RV dismantled. They weren't answering any questions. After paying $771, they left us for 5 hours in the heat while they worked on the RV. We had to call the sheriff. It was just a terrible experience.
$771. And you didn't have any, they didn't chalk your tires. They didn't give you the 72 hours to move your vehicle. They just one day towed it.
Correct. And I didn't have that money. I mean, that situation could have very well led me into homelessness. I mean, if I had to use my rent money or something to pay that fine, fortunately, I was able to get that money from Keith sitting here next to me to help me out of that situation. But it was extremely terrible, and the treatment was bad too. And it's not something that's isolated to myself. This happens to people who are vulnerable all over the city of Santa Cruz. I know somebody today who had to go down to Locust Street and petition a parking ticket because there was no chalk mark on his RV, and he received a ticket.
So I understand that you transitioned out of the vehicle and into a home. Can you tell us what that's like now and how that, what feeling is, what are you emotionally experiencing from not living in your vehicle anymore?
Oh my God, the reliefs. I mean, just getting your life back, not being harassed, not having everyone know where you live. When you're in an RV, people can target you. They can drive around and see where you're parked. They can make unnecessary police reports on you. I've dealt with all of that, and I have PTSD from it. 4 years I dealt with that.
And you have three children.
And I have three children, and just to be able to, you know, wake up with my kids, watch cartoons, cook them food, do normal activities. If my child throws a tantrum, the police aren't called on me. I mean, there's just monumental changes in my life.
So tell us, what that, how did you get on a list for the housing authority? How did you happen to be able to move into is it an apartment or a house?
It's an apartment. Fortunately for myself, I went through a program called Families in Transition, and shortly after getting accepted to that program, some emergency housing vouchers became available. I'm not exactly sure how that works, through the state or the federal government. There was a limited amount for people who were currently experiencing homelessness and who have a secondary issue such as a disability. My partner has epilepsy. So I
want to point out that
Keith McHenry.
Yeah, that Alicia struggled the entire 4 years to get housing. I mean, she went through every system that the county had, and it took her, it was just this, you know, it's almost like a miracle.
Could it be the COVID-related money that, you know, kind of like pushed it over and broke the dam and got a bunch of people housing, or are you one of the lucky few who actually got a house?
I do know from my personal experience, I am one of a lucky few. There were limited housing vouchers, and one of the challenges is finding housing even though you have a voucher. Just because you have a voucher does not necessarily mean that you're going to find housing. It's a really tough market. I feel like a lot of landlords are taking advantage of that. They've raised the rents, and so I was very, very lucky. And I'm very grateful and fortunate to the landlord and, you know, the people that did work with me. But not everybody is that fortunate, and it was a difficult path.
Keith McHenry, we have supposedly less than 1% occupancy rate in Santa Cruz. Can you guesstimate how many folks are actually living out at the benchlands, and how many people do you serve each day?
So we think it's at least 300. If you look at the number of tents, it could be 400 or 500. It's very hard to tell, and it keeps growing. It every week when you know, like I'm just astounded at the increased number. You know, it's incredible. And then they just cleared out like a bunch of homeless camps, and they were forced back down to the benchlands. So it's overwhelming. And then at the meal, we keep running out of supplies of every kind. You know, right now we have, you know, ran out of forks, so we usually get a donation of them from Worldcentric, but we went through all of them. We have to reorder over and over again. We run out of food all the time. We set up a connection with Grey Bears to make sure we have two deliveries to the benchland every week, because the people there can't leave their tents there to come to us to eat, because they will lose their stuff if they do. So the crisis is beyond comprehension, and we're at a point this summer where there's literally a possibility of the number of unhoused people doubling in the county, which is common throughout the California and the country.
What about today at the meal that you've fed people at the town clock? You're still at
right, right at the town clock.
So it was over. It was 100 degrees in Santa Cruz today. 102 yes. Over the hill. 100 degrees. What was that like?
So it was. Well, people would come and eat and leave because they couldn't stand being in the little limited amount of shade that the town clock and our canopies. Fort, but we still had the 150, 200 people come, you know, eat with us. We still, you know, ran low on food. Now the thing is water. I mean, you'll see me any day. You can see me at New Leaf filling 8 5-gallon jugs full of fresh water, filtered water, because the water is running out. You know, people have really very little access to water.
Real quick plug. To help you defray those costs of filling up water, buying some forks, buying some food, how can people donate to Food Not Bombs? You have a Venmo account? You have a website?
We have a Food Not Bombs account. You can go to PayPal on Food Not Bombs. Unfortunately, I have to re-up the PayPal every couple of days because PayPal takes down opponents of the state from PayPal. So that's been frustrating. I have to
No Venmo account.
And we have a Venmo account.
What's that?
And that's Food Not Bombs.
Yeah,
Food Not Bombs. But there's a lot of Food Not Bombs. So you want to find the Food Not Bombs that says also Keith McHenry, if you want to donate directly to us. But you can donate to the other chapter. You know, we're in 1,000 cities, so it's not, you know, there's many Venmo accounts. But our PayPal account is at foodnotbombs.net. And if you run into problems and the thing pops up again, as it often does, doesn't work, contact me at the number that's above it, and I will post the link so that it works again briefly. But we're spending $1,000 a week in gas right now. So we spend $4,000 to rent the kitchen and up in Scotts Valley, and we spend I hand out $1,000 every meeting on Monday at the the Resource Center for Nonviolence in gas, because the prices of gas are so intense, and we have people that are going to pick up deliveries all around town of food. We have people, you know, it's incredible. I've never seen anything like it. So we are always desperate for funds just to keep this going.
This is KSQD 90.7 and KSQD.org. My guests today on Talk of the Bay are Keith McHenry of Food Not Bombs and homeless advocate Alicia Cool. Keith, politics. I know you're deep in it with the city. There's two questions I have for you. One is, have you seen a strategy of the city sort of putting everybody over at San Lorenzo Park and pushing them out of every other place in town? And are they actually telling them to go to the San Lorenzo Park?
Yeah, that seems to be the case. And city council claimed that they, or maybe the city manager claimed that they stopped doing that, but they're doing it again. And you don't find, you know, the camps get swept. If you're, even if you're up on the higher level at San Lorenzo Park, they move you back down to the benchlands. And it's now going all the way to the Soquel Bridge at this point. You know, it's getting, or to the, really to the Renta Forte Creek. And it's really, I can't believe that they're packing that many more tents into there. And I ran out of tents yesterday, and I got people asking me for tents today. So we're spending between, you know, $500 to sometimes up to $2,000 a month on tents. We had to kind of slow that down because we're trying to now to use the money for gas. But it's just heartbreaking. People coming, and then the new homeless. So imagine, almost every week, well, definitely every week, but several times a week, usually an older woman, a couple of older women, in their 60s, 70s, or 80s will come and say their RV was towed and they lost all their belongings and they want to go to the shelter. And there is no shelter to be sending people to. So we try to get them into a shelter. You can't get them into a shelter because there's no space at the shelters, what little there is, and it's really dismal, the conditions there. And then we hand them the pup tent, and we walk them over to the benchlands and help them set it up. And Alicia, that, we do this for months now. This might be
Alicia,
6 months.
Cool. What's your experience? How do you analyze this strategy of the city pushing everybody into the benchlands and not really, as Keith just pointed out, providing shelter space? And I spoke with the city manager a month ago, and he said that there was space for 150 people in the shelters. And you know, I said, well, it seems like there's over 300 people over at the benchlands. What are we going to do? So he thought July 1st was going to be a soft sort of getting people out of the. Now they've changed that strategy, I guess, I've heard. What's your sense of how do you look at the city's strategy and how are they reacting to this crisis, this human crisis?
Sure. Well, I wrote a cease and desist to them about their plan to close the benchlands in July. Their plan clearly is insufficient for the number of people that are at the benchlands. I really wish that, you know, 2.5 years ago when we were discussing available shelter alternatives and encampment spaces, that would have been, you know, looked at instead of, you know, recall efforts. Here we are. The issue has, you know, substantially grown. I think that the city should only remove people living at the benchlands that they have alternative placement for. They should avoid evicting the encampment in its entirety, especially during the pandemic. It's still against CDC guidelines to remove an encampment during the pandemic. You're supposed to bring services to that encampment. And so if they intend on relocating the encampment, then that's, you know, that's one strategy and one idea. But they need to have sufficient alternatives for each and every person that resides there. I do think there are plenty of solutions in town that could be implemented. I think that the lack of, you know, proper decisions by our current city council have prevented that, and instead that they have focused on criminalization and ordinances. And
well, jump into that. You are guessing my next question. If you had a magic wand, how would you house the people who are presently unhoused in Santa Cruz? Where would you start?
Well, I would stop closing the shelters that we have currently, for one thing. And I would look at city-owned property, available space. I would stop using so much money on staffing and make sure that the people who are unhoused are actually getting services with that money instead of, you know, highly paid staff members at, you know, nonprofits and other places.
And when you say highly paid, these folks are making over 150, right? Some of the executive directors of some of these groups.
Yes. And meanwhile, we don't have any motel vouchers or even basic needs services. So one thing, not only do we have a lack of shelter capacity, you know, motel vouchers aren't being passed out, we don't have places for people to take a shower, do their laundry, get their daily needs met in terms of.
So this is what you would do. You'd implement programs that would, you know, address showers and laundry.
Absolutely. And if I spent money on staffing, it would be for mental health services, substance abuse services, because we also lack those things. Not everybody who's homeless has a need for that, but we have a lack of those services for people who do need that. And
Keith,
so
Keith McHenry, it seems like Black Lives Matter, I just want to play off what Alicia Kuhl was saying, the Black Lives Matter movement kind of exposed a lot of things that were going on, and there was support for redirecting resources of police departments toward the issues and the programs that Alicia Kuhl is talking about, mental health, substance abuse programs. Now we're in a different era. What happened?
Well, it seems like a lot of that money, in fact, a bunch of COVID money, went to cops as opposed to helping people living outside. So, the city council talked repeatedly in their report of May 5th about $14 million. $14 million. That was the most common thing other than the word A or the, you know, the words A and the, well, they're $14 million. Well, what? So you look at that, and so I go up to the Gulf Links because I had so many people. This is next to the Armory. The Armory's closing, and as people know, 260 people are being kicked out of shelters at the end of the month into the streets with no place to go. It's adding to this crisis. And it was miserable there. So the money for $14 million, you could do a lot better than the Benchlands is like almost more organized and better than the city run Gulf Links, and then I went over to 1220 River, and it's a similar situation.
So is that closing 1220 River too?
That one's, but they're both full. And now they're kicking everybody out of the Armory and out of the shelter in Watsonville. So
I heard they were putting the pressure on you too to move where you feed people. You can't do it.
Oh, that's
every
been really
day.
Funny.
How has that been? I know the city council took it up. There's an ultimatum, I thought, that was given to you. Can you go through the steps?
Yeah, that's been really interesting. So once we got kicked out of the last place because of a development, we moved to the town clock. Then we got a cease and desist order from the city attorney. We ignored it. And then they passed a law that you're supposed to only be there, you have to be there only four times a week. I met with Tony Elliott at the bench, at the town
clerk. The Parks and Rec Commission, director?
Director, and with Bernie Escalante and Sandy Brown. And they thought, well, you know, why don't you do it only 4 days a week here? We said, people need food every day. Plus, people living outside don't know what day of the week it is necessarily. You know, why would they need to? So if they had to find us every couple of days, that would be insane. Plus, there is a war, there is a poverty, there is an economic crisis, and protest is traditional at the town clock, and we are a protest. We're called Food Not Bombs. The $40 billion that went to arm Ukraine recently is the same exact amount of money HUD says could house every homeless American. So we are making a decision to not house people, not help people. The city council could be uniting with us and to organize the federal protests against the federal government to fund housing for the homeless instead of the policies that they're currently doing.
Wow.
Instead of attacking us. So, I mean, our country's made a choice.
Where are you at right now vis-a-vis the police? They gave you, said, Keith, we want you only there 4 days a week, and you said, I'm sorry, I'm going to be here 7 days. How'd you leave it?
I just told Bernie that, you know, that we're not leaving. We're here. It's a First Amendment activity. We'll be here every day as the economy's crashing. There's nothing much
and
to
so
do.
And so they haven't said, hey, we're going to take it down if you put it up the other 3 days.
Yeah, no, there's nothing that the city can do, particularly as the crisis is expanding. I recently reposted my September 10th 2019 flyer where I was suggesting people go to city council that night to see about the policies of the city in lieu of the fact that there was going to be a global economic crisis. Well, nothing has happened sent by the city to handle that. They're now about to see a global economic crisis. They're about to see, we are seeing a food shortage already. And so there's not much they can really do unless they want looting downtown or something.
Our time is winding down, and I wanted to get from you, Alicia, what's the toll been like? You're a mother. You know, maybe put your mother hat on. You have three kids. Maybe you could say their ages. What has that been like, being a mother during this, being homeless and transitioning? And, what's life like?
I can say that it changed who I am. Being homeless and going through those things, it's not just something that you kind of pass through and you get over. It changes who you are. And I've often said, you know, how will your community treat you if you ever lose your home? And it's important to really look at that. We've had to do, and we are still doing, because it's been just a short period of time, a lot of healing based on what happened. The way people treat people who've lost their home, the way people, I've attended tons and tons of city council meetings, and I've heard haters say things like, we can't have this shelter next to this school, and things like that. You know, you asked me to put my mother hat on. I have kids.
What's been the effect on your kids? What did they say? If you don't mind sharing that with us.
I mean, they have a poor outlook on police. they have kind of been traumatized by being woken up. I told the police that they weren't allowed to talk to my children because they were just kind of always knocking on the door, asking what we're doing, you know, can your kids come to the door, things like that. I told them no towards the end because the harassment was just so frequent. And so I just wanted to point out to the community, you know, I've been in school meetings and, you know, assemblies and things like that. I'm sure that I've stood right next to people who talk poorly about the homeless. You know, our children could even be in the same class. Treat people with kindness, especially when people have lost their housing.
And in 2020, you ran for city council, and you'd think that a candidate would not be... Well, what happened to you when you were a candidate? Because this harassment didn't stop, did it?
No, definitely not. The current city council went above the parking authority, transportation authority. I had won an appeal in order to keep my parking, where I was parking on Olive Street in town. And they rejected that and took away my parking and made it extremely hard for me to even run for city council.
Coach Keith, you get the last word here. What's the game plan? Your homeless strategy, your houseless strategy. What are you going to follow? What kind of game plan?
Well, I don't think we can depend on any governments of any kind on any level to do anything, because so it's basically up to the people, and thankfully the people in Santa Cruz themselves have come out and supported this. So we're going to have to handle the crisis ourselves by housing people ourselves, by feeding people ourselves, and sadly, housing people ourselves means competence in the streets, and that's just the fact of the matter. We cannot depend on the city government, county government, the state government, the federal government to come to our rescue. So we're just going to live independent of the state and keep things going, and we're not going to stop. There's nothing this state can do to stop us, short of like just shooting us.
We're going to have to leave it there. Thank you both for sharing your thoughts on the homeless crisis.
Thank
Keith McHenry of Food Not Bombs, Alicia Kuhl of the Homeless Union. I'm Chris Krohn, the Talk of the Bay. We'll be right back in a Santa Cruz second.
But I can't just tear myself away from those Dave Lippmann songs, I guess they are. This one's called Alberta Tarbillies, and the lyrics, at least some of them, go like this. Come listen to a story about Alberta tar sands in a western province of wheat-grown lands. Tycoons found a complement for their blue blood down in the ground with some tar sand crud. Oh, that is dirty oil, pollution tea, toxic sludge, water waste, tailing ponds. I never swam in ammonia if it's mixed with cyanide. Well, the first thing you know, TransCanada was there. A corporation said, better move the tar, but where? Turns out Texas is the place where they refine, so they fueled up their tools and built a pipeline. Oil spilling, river ruining, petroleum dependent, climate killing, acidic, corrosive, volatile, unstable, like its builders. Fossil fools. They say if you build it, it will spill. You can't tweak, but it'll leak in wildlife. It'll kill. Runs through an aquifer we can't live without. Will the planet survive? Oil industry clout? Let's hear it for the long-term strategies for energy sanity. Now let's hear it for short-term profits. How about that destruction of indigenous lands? Putting that much sulfur and acid in a pipe. What they been smoking? Is it time to say goodbye to atmosphere and earth? We would like to thank you folks for shouldering what it's worth, or shouting what it's worth. You're all invited back again to this locality to share a heaping helping of your solidarity. Earth saving, that is. Set a spell. Civil disobedience. Y'all save the planet, you hear? So I'm offering this warm refrain. The mercury's at 92. Foggy Scotland's shores are now hot as Bahrain. Scary business melting me and you.
Nations roasting cause of climate lies. Jack Frost lost his way, God knows. Yuletide carols sung while weepers fire, and fogs dressed up like, well, too hot for clothes. Come listen to a story about Alberta tar sand in a western province of wheat growing land. Tycoons found a compliment for their blue blood. Down in the ground was some tar sand crud. Oil, that is.
Dirty oil.
Pollution tea.
Toxic sludge.
I never swim in ammonia.
If it's mixed with cyanide.
Well, first thing you know, TransCanada was there. Corporation said, better move the tar, but where? Turns out Texas is the place where they refine. So they fueled up their tools and built a pipeline. Oil spilling.
River ruining.
Petroleum dependent.
Plant killing.
Acidic.
Corrosive.
Volatile.
Unstable.
Like its builders.
Fossil fools.
They say if you build it, it will spill. But it'll leak and wildlife it'll kill. Runs through an aquifer we can't live without. Will the planet survive oil industry drought? Let's hear it for long-term strategies for energy sanity.
How about that destruction of indigenous land?
Wouldn't that much sulfur and acid in a pipe? What they've been smoking. Is it time to say goodbye to atmosphere and earth? We would like to thank you folks for shouting what it's worth. You're all invited back again to this locality to share a heaping helping of your solidarity. Earth saving, that is.
Shut a spell.
Civil disobedience.
Help save the planet, you hear?
Let me give you a hand in that. So I'm offering this warm refrain. The mercury's at 92. Scotland shores are now hot as Bahrain. Scary business, melting me and you.
And now a very recent interview with Keith McHenry.